But she's your daddy's whore, and heaven help the man who forgets that. The men stared at her, their startled eyes reminding me of the peacock dinner plates. Gentlemen, she addressed them, I appreciate the fact that you are all such law-abiding citizens. However, now I'm asking you to leave my property. I expect you to untie the boy outside and leave him to me. The young man from the corner stepped forward, removed his hat, and ran his hand through his straight, dark brown hair. We do apologize for disrupting your day, Mrs. Pike. It appears that we've been misinformed. The others glared at him. This is a matter for the law, one of them mumbled. And what is your name, sir? Miss Martha addressed the young man who had apologized to her. It's, Stevens, he stammered. Will Stevens. Stevens, she said. That is a familiar name. Does the captain know your daddy? Yes, ma'am, he replied, fingering his hat. We rent the property from the captain down the east side. Don't tell me you're the little boy who helped us out here at the barns the year that Marshall was born, she asked, her voice taking on a lilt. His face flushed. Yes, ma'am. One and the same. My goodness, you've grown up, she said. It makes me feel so much better knowing that I have you watching out for us up on the hill. And you tell your daddy I said that, won't you? He assured her that he would. When Rankin made his exit, the others quickly left with him. Papa remained at Miss Martha's side when she followed. As the others rode off, Rankin headed toward the quarters. Miss Martha's voice caught him. Mr. Rankin. He turned back. I don't want you to worry about a thing up here, she said. My house servants will be armed. She indicated Papa standing to her side with a pistol. I expect they'll be nervous from this excitement. I do hope that my sleep will not be interrupted by the sound of gunfire, but they shall be encouraged to use the firearms should they suspect an intruder on the grounds of the big house. Rankin's face darkened, but he said nothing as he turned back toward the quarters. To my surprise, Marshall ran to follow Rankin, but his mother called him back. For a moment it looked as though he was going to disobey, but when she called again, Marshall kicked the dirt and ran up toward the big house. I need to sit. Miss Martha had suddenly lost all her color. Mama reached for her and supported her into the kitchen, where Uncle was helping Ben to his feet. Once free, Ben rushed out the door. Belle, leaning on the table, struck it over and over again with the flat of her hand. From outside, Papa called for Mama to come help with Jimmy. Uncle Jacob seated Miss Martha before he went to Belle. Belle, he said, placing a hand on her arm and speaking firmly. Jimmy out there needin' help. Come now. It's fortunate that no one was hurt, Miss Martha said. Belle swung toward her, eyes blazing. Uncle stepped between them. Miss Martha, we best get you back up to the big house. May and George take care of everything down here. If the captain come home, he want you up there waiting for him. Come, I take you back. He extended his elbow, and Miss Martha rose to take his arm. Uncle signaled with his eyes for me to follow. I didn't want to go. I was scared, and I wanted to stay with Belle. I wondered where Ben was and if he was all right. I could not erase the look I had seen on his face when he lay bound, unable to help Belle. In spite of my reluctance, I was obedient, but when our small party had almost reached the big house, we heard muffled crashes coming from behind us. It sounded as though pots were being hurtled against the kitchen house wall.
Chapter 16. Belle. Everybody's full of nerves. Every day now we're all waiting on the captain to get home. Since Rankin and the men showed up here in the kitchen house, Ben don't come to see me no more. It's better this way. But I think he stays away because he shamed himself. The day Rankin was throwing me around, Ben run out of here stinking like a privy. It's not his fault. After they take his ear, I know how scared he's got to be. That day here in the kitchen house, there was nothing Ben could do, I know that. But he's a man, and maybe he don't see it that way. Everybody's stepping real careful. Rankin's just looking for something to get a hold of.
Chapter 17. Lavinia. A wagon pulled up the day before Christmas, and the mistress joyfully ran to the front door. Piles of gifts and a letter arrived, but the captain did not. Miss Martha went pale when she learned that he had not come, and Uncle Jacob quickly led her to a sofa in the parlor, where she sat in disbelief, clutching an unopened letter. "He isn't coming," she said to herself. "Dear God, he isn't coming." Mama rushed in. "He isn't coming, May." Miss Martha looked at Mama as though she might say otherwise. Mama looked as upset as Miss Martha. Finally, she said,
"You best read that letter."
"Yes." Miss Martha looked down at it in her hands. "The letter." She seemed to have forgotten that she was holding it. Marshall appeared at the door.
"Where's father?"
He looked around the room expectantly. "Give me a minute, Marshall," his mother answered.
"I'm reading his letter."
Her eyes skimmed the beginning paragraph. "He has sold the ship," she cried. "But he cannot finish the business of it yet. He begs our forgiveness, but he won't be home until spring." She set the letter down in her lap. Mama May lowered herself onto the nearest chair. Marshall snatched the letter from his mother's lap. There was a hollow silence while he scanned the paper.
"He's taking you to Philadelphia."
"I'm to go to Williamsburg." Miss Martha looked up at her son's face. "What? What did you say?"
"Read the rest."
Marshall handed back the letter and pointed to the information. As she read, Miss Martha's face began to show color again. "Marshall," she said excitedly, "you're right. He has found a school for you in Williamsburg, and he's made arrangements for me to visit my father in Philadelphia. I am to see father again. We shall stay the whole summer." Tears began to slide down her face, and I watched them drip into the bodice of her blue brocade dress. Marshall abruptly left the room, but the strain on Mama's face remained. Christmas came and went with little celebration, although there was a dance down at the quarters. Ben was the only one to attend, and when he returned, drunk, he woke us by knocking on Belle's kitchen door and calling out for her. He made such a noise that Papa came to get him. Papa spoke urgently to his son, and I thought I heard Ben crying when they walked away. Belle was crying, too, so I climbed into her bed and tried to comfort her, as Mama might have done, but I fell asleep before she stopped weeping. The mistress waited 2 long days before deciding that she was in the mood to open her Christmas gifts. "Can Beatty and Fanny watch with me?" I asked. "I suppose that would be all right," she agreed reluctantly. When I ran to find them, she called after me, "See if Marshall will come, too." The girls and I went to find Marshall, but Papa, cleaning out a stall in the barn, told us that he was out riding with Rankin. The twins and I ran to the big house, filled with excitement at the prospect of watching Miss Martha open her gifts. I told Miss Martha of Marshall's whereabouts, and she frowned.
"What does he do with that man?" she asked.
I didn't have an answer, though I don't suppose she expected one. "Oh, well, he'll soon be away from here," she answered herself. "We'll go ahead, then. He has already opened his gifts." Beatty, Fanny, and I watched, awestruck, as Miss Martha lined up her packages after a note instructed her to open the gifts in sequence. From the first parcel, Miss Martha withdrew 2 dolls. She read aloud, "I have been assured that these Moppets are wearing the very latest in London fashion.
I am having both of these copied for you by an excellent dressmaker here in Williamsburg, and I will bring the finished product to you in the spring. It is my heart's desire to see you wear them in Philadelphia. I am hopeful that you approve of the fabric and color selection. Yours as ever, James. We girls had never seen such delightful beauty. The Moppets were wooden dolls with painted faces, and their human hair was done up in elaborate curls. Their dresses were of a gossamer fabric. One was an empire style in blue, the body and train trimmed in elegant silver embroidery. The other, similar in style, was a pale cream trimmed with white embroidery and ivory ribbons. The next two packages each held a pair of shoes. One pair of delicate slippers was made of blue silk satin, trimmed in silver embroidery, the low heels covered in ivory satin. The other pair was of ivory silk, trimmed with pink ribbon rosettes, and had heels covered in pink satin. I simply couldn't imagine something that beautiful was to be worn on a foot, and I told Miss Martha so. She laughed and pulled off the brown leather shoe she was wearing, then slipped her slender foot into the blue satin slipper and held it up for us to see. She turned her ankle in a circle and pointed her toe, then laughed again when we all exclaimed at the perfect fit. Further packages included elbow-length silk gloves and two pairs of embroidered stockings. Miss Martha explained that these accessories were to complement the dresses. Finally, from the bottom of the last box, Miss Martha removed a flat brown envelope and studied it. My reading had advanced enough for me to recognize Belle's name printed boldly across the top. Miss Martha frowned, turned it over a few times, then rose. Telling us to stay seated, she carried the package to the study. I thought I heard the desk drawer open, and when she returned without the envelope, I guessed that she had placed it with her letters, those wrapped in blue ribbon. "Was that for Belle?" I asked. She looked startled for a minute. "No," she said. "That is for me to open later." I knew from her tone that the subject was finished, and I thought then that I must have misread Belle's name. Dory called for me soon after, needing me to care for Campbell, and I forgot all else but the beauty of the gifts that I had seen unwrapped that day.
Chapter 18. Belle. Never before do I see Mama May worked up like this. Rankin is nosing around, talking about how he's going to find out what happened to Waters before the captain gets home. Then, too, Rankin's bragging all over the place that he got orders from the captain that if he finds Ben fooling with me, he's to sell him off. Mama May tells me over and over again to make sure I don't have nothing to do with Ben, that if he comes to see me, I got to send him away. Mama says to keep praying that the captain gets home quick. Then, don't you know, the captain sends a letter saying he's not coming back until the spring, when he'll take Miss Martha to Philadelphia. That night when Mama comes to give me the news, I ask Mama what's going to happen to me when the captain comes home. Is he going to take me along back to Philadelphia? Is he thinking that he can put Miss Martha and me in the same carriage all that way? Mama says she don't know when the captain's taking me, but it's best I get away from here as soon as I can. When she says that, I jump up yelling, "Well, it's easy to see that you don't care about me and that Ben is the one you're looking out for." Mama gives me a look like I hit her in the face. She stands up. "That what you think, Belle? You think I don't want you here?" Her mouth is moving like she's gonna cry. "You think I don't want you to stay? You don't know that when you go, it's like I'm losing my own child?" Then Mama starts to cry. I go to her, put my arm around her, and sit her down beside me. "I'm sorry, Mama," I say. "I know you care about me like you do your own family. Mama, please stop crying." She pulls out a rag, blows her nose, and looks at me, her dark eyes scared.
Bill, you got to get out of here. That Rankin's getting more worked up every day. He can't stand it that he don't find out what happens to that tutor. My nerves can't hardly take it when I see him nosing around. He won't stop till he gets Ben. That I know.
Mama, I say, and this time I know I got to stand by it. You don't worry about Ben and me. I don't have nothing to do with him no more. After Mama goes, it takes me a while to settle down. This is the first time I see how this is all getting to her. I see that even Mama got limits of what she can take. One more thing. Papa's saying how Marshall's spending all his time with Rankin. He's letting that boy drink liquor, and young as he is, Papa says Marshall's already got a taste for it. Papa says Rankin got it in for Miss Martha, and he doing everything he can to turn her boy against her. I don't see nothing but trouble coming every way I look.
Chapter 19. Lavinia. The spring of 1793 came early. One afternoon at the beginning of May, the twins and I, celebrating our 9th birthday, sat outside the kitchen house fashioning honeysuckle wreaths. The white and yellow heady-scented blooms permeated the air as our nimble fingers worked quickly to see who could finish first.
Mama say one day you live in a big house, maybe even that you have the house servants working for you,
Fanny said, placing her completed wreath on her head.
No,
I said, quite happy with the arrangements as they were.
I want to stay with Belle.
No, Fanny shook her head.
Mama say that Miss Martha teaching you to be the white girl.
I don't want to be the white girl, I said, fear rising in me.
I want to live with Belle, and then I'm going to marry Ben.
Fanny, who had been resting back on her elbows, sat up straight to look at me.
You best get over that idea right now, she said. You never gonna be colored like us. And that mean you a white girl, and you going to live in a big house. Anyway, you can't marry Ben. He colored. Fanny right about that?
Beatty agreed. I began to cry.
I can marry Ben if I want to. You can't make me be a white girl.
I tossed my wreath aside.
And you can't make me live in the big house.
Mama came to the door.
Lavinia, that you crying? You 9 years old and still crying like a baby?
She wantin' to marry Ben, Fanny explained. She not wantin' to live in the big house. She not wantin' to be a white girl.
As Fanny spoke my truth, I began to howl.
If that don't beat all, said Mama. This is the first time I hear of something like this. Come here, child.
I went to her, hiccuping between sobs. She sat on a bench, took her pipe from her mouth, and lightly tapped my chest with it.
So, you think that you want to be colored?
I nodded.
Why that be?
I don't want to live in the big house. I want to stay here with you and Belle and Papa.
Mama's voice was tender.
Child, there are things in this world you don't know about yet. We your family that never change. Even when you find a white boy and gets married, we still your family. Mama always your mama, Belle always your Belle.
I stopped crying. What about Papa and Ben? I asked hopefully.
They watch out for you just like now, Lavinia.
Mama looked into my eyes.
You on the winning side. One day might be you looking out for us.
Her words calmed me, but that day I was awakened to a new realization and made aware of a line drawn in black and white, though the depth of it still had little meaning to me. Throughout that spring, Marshall spent most of his time with Rankin. The mistress had lost control over her eldest son. He was as removed from her as she was from Campbell. Miss Martha continued to include me in many of her routine activities. She read daily from the Bible and stopped occasionally to give me her interpretation of certain passages. She continued to teach me to read and write, and to my great delight, to play the harpsichord. Some days at my request, she allowed Beatty and Fanny to observe, but she was always hesitant to include them. One afternoon, after watching the three of us laugh together, the mistress took me aside.
"You must not become too friendly with them," she said. "They are not the same as us."
"How?" I asked. "How are they not the same?"
"You will learn," she sighed deeply. "When I come back from Philadelphia, I will teach you your proper place."
Campbell was my love. In the mornings, following his feeding, Dory bundled him and sent him in with me to Miss Martha. Compared to Suki, Campbell was still a sober little fellow, but I knew how to make him smile. The mistress watched his happy response to my games, but she seldom joined in.
"Why doesn't she want him?" I asked Dory one day when I brought him back.
Dory's reasoning was that the mistress was afraid to love another baby the way she loved little Sally.
"Doesn't she love Marshall anymore?" I asked.
"I think she blaming Marshall for pushing Sally off the swing."
"But Marshall didn't mean to hurt Sally." I was sure of that.
"I know, but it seemed like his mama don't know," she said. "And now Marshall going wild, sassing her and spending his time with Rankin."
"Where do they go?"
"To do bad things."
"What bad things?" I asked.
"You learn about that soon enough," she said,
ending the conversation. The second week of May, I was waiting at the front door with Miss Martha when the captain finally arrived. The reunited couple held each other for a long while before they went to the front parlor and closed the door behind them. The house pulsed with life as we all scurried to set the table for a late afternoon dinner in the dining room. When the captain and his wife emerged, Miss Martha's face had a pink glow that set off her sparkling green eyes. Her mouth was red and full, and her hair, which had been pinned up, now was tousled down around her shoulders.
"May," the captain said to Mama, "you have given me back my girl."
"She shall back to her old self,"
Mama said, smiling. The captain gazed down at his wife.
"That she is."
Miss Martha blushed and leaned her face against his arm.
"My bride is still shy," the captain teased.
He looked around.
"And where are my sons? Where is Marshall? Where is Campbell?"
So connected was I to Campbell that when Dory handed him over to his father, I felt pride when the captain commented on his son's healthy appearance.
"Martha," he said proudly, "you have given me another wonderful son."
"Yes, yes." Miss Martha motioned for Dory to take the baby away. "Come now, we must go in to eat while the food is hot." I disliked that Miss Martha wanted the captain's attention for herself. I held Campbell for a long while that afternoon, trying to understand how she could care so little for this child whom I adored. The following week, Marshall was dispatched to Williamsburg. The captain sent him to stay with Miss Martha's sister and her husband while he attended school. Marshall left alone in the carriage, and he did not turn back to wave. At the finish of that green and shining May, another carriage arrived. This one was large and glossy black, a surprise for Miss Martha, and purchased new for this very trip. When it left for Philadelphia, it carried away Miss Martha, the captain, Dory, and my darling baby Campbell. Suki, 8 months old, was left behind in our care. When Dory handed her baby over to Mama May, she cried so hard that I feared her heart would break. Belle hugged Dory.
"You're gonna be back in a few months," she said. "We'll all take care of Suki, you know that."
"Abinya?" Dory pulled away from Belle and took my shoulders.
"You know what she like, what she want. You watch her for me."
I nodded, but my throat hurt too much to speak.
"Tell Ida that she like to nurse before she play," Dory instructed me. "Then after you hold her,
She know you. You play with her. I nodded again, wanting only to turn away from the pain on Dory's face. As we watched them drive away, this time it was Dory holding Campbell, who did not turn back to wave. Belle had her arm around my shoulders, and I hid my head against her as I began to wail at my loss. Ida, nursing a child of her own, came up from the quarters to feed her grandchild, Suki. Screaming for most of the first day, Suki wouldn't nurse. Finally, to everyone's great relief, she accepted Ida's nourishment that evening. She nursed, stopped to cry, then suckled again. Later, Mama took her home but returned soon after with the crying child. I must have seemed the most familiar to the baby, for when Suki saw me, she reached out her dimpled arms and clung to me. It was decided that she would sleep next to me on my pallet, with Belle watching over us. When Suki woke during the night, Belle lit a lamp and made her way through the darkness down to the spring house. On her return, she warmed some of the milk she had fetched. We dipped a corner of a clean cloth into it, and although the baby fussed, she swallowed the warm liquid that dripped into her throat. It took a full week before Suki settled into a routine, accepting Ida's breast morning and evening. Belle and I supplemented those feedings with cow's milk. That first week, I felt alternately flattered by the baby's preference for me, then overwhelmed by the responsibility of it. I longed to be holding Campbell, and could only hope that Dory was caring for him as I was caring for Suki. Before the captain's departure, he made a decision that affected everyone for the better. He employed Will Stevens, the young man who had stood back from the patrollers in Belle's kitchen. I knew that Papa George and Mama May had met with the captain about hiring him. A few nights before the departure, Belle, too, had a meeting with the captain. I was not there, but the encounter had an unhappy effect on Belle. Even with the frantic preparations to send off the travelers, it was easy to see that Belle was upset. After they left, she withdrew into herself, until after a few days of isolation, Mama came for an evening visit. Suki and I were already in bed, but I was wide awake as I listened to the conversation. Belle steered questions away from herself. She asked Mama, "So why did the captain hire Will Stevens?"
"He gonna work with Rankin, but he mostly here if we needin' him up at the big house. He gonna write to the captain and tell him what happenin' while the captain and Miss Martha away."
Mama forged ahead.
"Belle, I'm wondering what the captain say to you about you leaving."
"Mama, he got a man for me to marry." Belle began to cry. I felt better when her sobs became muffled because I knew then that Mama's arms were around her.
"What'd he tell you about him?"
Mama said.
"He's a free black man living in Philadelphia. He has his own business making shoes, and the captain says he's gonna buy us a good house. He's coming for me when the captain comes back."
"We always know this day coming, Belle,"
Mama said. Belle blew her nose.
"Make sure Ben stays away, Mama. The captain said again that Rankin got the right to sell him off."
"Papa making sure to keep Ben away."
"I don't want to go, Mama," she wailed.
"You got to do this, Belle. You're gonna be free,"
Mama said.
"The captain said that he sent my free papers at Christmas."
"He sent them,"
Mama said.
"Where are they at?"
"I don't know. He say he send them with Miss Martha's packages."
"Did you tell him that you don't get them from her?"
"No, but they got to be up at the house."
"Belle, you got to find those papers."
"I know, Mama, but there's something else."
"What's that?"
"I asked to take Fanny or Beattie, thinking they'd get their free papers, but he said no. I got to take Lavinia," Belle said.
"He gonna let her go free?" Mama asked.
"That's what he said," Belle said.
"Well, then, that be that."
I sat up, my heart pounding with this news. I didn't want to leave. This was my home. When Suki fussed, I lay back down and stroked her dimpled hand for comfort until I finally drifted off to sleep. But I woke again in the night, nauseated with fear. I had dreamed that I was riding away from the plantation in a large black carriage, and that I was all alone, like Marshall. The next morning I asked Belle if I was going away with her.
"I think so," she said. "But we're here now, so there's no need to worry."
When I pressed her for more information, she answered me sharply.
"Look, Lavinia, I don't want to talk about this no more. We'll see what happens when the captain comes home."
I knew from her tone that Belle would not discuss it further, so I told her about the package that I had forgotten about, the one addressed to her, the one I had seen at Christmas. She and Mama had me show her the desk drawer that I thought Miss Martha had put it in, but it was not there. Together they searched the house for the papers, but they were nowhere to be found. The two finally gave up, knowing that on the captain's return the matter would be resolved. With Will Stevens in place, life for us that summer was easy. If it hadn't been for the knowledge that Belle and I were being sent away, it might have been the happiest of times. Mama took the opportunity to teach the twins and me how to clean the big house. She showed us how to sprinkle fine sand on the yellow pine floors, then to sweep them clean with water. She instructed us on how to polish the furniture using linseed oil or beeswax, depending on the wood. Then came the day that Mama took us to clean out the nursery. Before he left, the captain had asked Mama to move Sally's things to the attic and have the room ready for Campbell on their return. After Mama opened the door to the children's room, the twins and I entered, mouths agape. There were two beds, two chests of drawers, and more playthings than I ever could have imagined. A child's table was draped with a small linen cloth and set with a miniature pink and white china tea set. A gray and white rocking horse stood at the ready, his black mane swept to one side, his dark eyes inviting us to ride. On one of the two child-sized chairs, I recognized Sally's porcelain doll. The room was filled with the little girl's presence. Mama nodded, giving us permission to examine the toys. We did not hesitate, and soon were caught up in the excitement of touching so many treasures. I picked up a picture book and was delighted to find that I could read it. Fanny tried on a wide-brimmed straw hat that had been on one of the beds. Then she went to peer at herself in a small mirror that hung on the wall over a low dresser. Beatty reverently picked up the doll and held it in her lap while stroking its blonde curls. We shared our finds until Mama, looking uneasy all the while, told us it was time to pack Sally's things away. After Uncle Jacob carried the boxes away to store them on the third floor, there was an odd, empty feel to the room, and we were happy to leave. In the following days, Mama had us help her clean out the blue room, too. I was not prepared for the feelings of melancholy when I was surrounded by Campbell's things. I wondered how I could bear to be without him if I were to leave for Philadelphia. We carried Campbell's cradle and supplies to the nursery, but now that room seemed dark and overlarge for a baby. I couldn't help feeling we should have left the room as it was, for with the removal of Miss Sally's belongings, we seemed to have taken away what had been left of her pink light. Ben surprised everyone in early June when he announced that he had jumped the broom with a girl from down in the quarters. She was a field worker, and her name was Lucy. Mama seemed hesitant to tell Belle of the union, and when she did, though Belle said not a word, she could not keep the look of betrayal and hurt from her eyes. The newly married couple spent the following nights in Ben's sleeping quarters down by the barn, but the bride left early every morning at the sound of the horn to join the others from the quarters as they headed out for the fields. Rankin had agreed to the wedding, providing that Lucy remain a worker under him. At the end of June, Will Stevens brought Belle the first letter from Philadelphia. He was a striking man, with deep-set brown eyes, a firm jaw, and an easy-going smile. Of average height, he was strongly built and carried himself with assurance. He always took off his hat when he came indoors and had a habit of pushing back his thick brown hair before he spoke. Will's directness was his greatest charm. He looked into your eyes, and when you looked back, you knew he was incapable of deceit. When Will brought that first letter, I heard him apologize to Belle for the episode in the spring, when Rankin had a hold of her. Will said he had shamed himself by not stepping forward to help her, and he asked her for forgiveness. Belle was shy with him but accepted his apology. He then asked if he should read the letter to her, though he did not seem surprised when Belle declined, and instead presented her open hand. After he left, she sent me to the big house to get Mama. On our return, I held Suki while we listened to Belle read the letter aloud. It told of the traveler's safe arrival, and it carried alarming news as well. Miss Martha's father was ill, but worse, it was feared that Philadelphia was in the midst of a yellow fever epidemic. The captain stated his desire to return home, but Miss Martha refused to leave her sick father. Another letter was promised within 2 weeks. True to his word, 2 weeks later, we received further correspondence from the captain. Will Stevens came again to deliver the letter, and this time Belle invited him in. Ben happened to be replacing the iron crane in the kitchen fireplace, and when he walked in and heard Belle cheerfully conversing with Will Stevens, he quickly rushed back out. I wondered why he looked so angry. Again, Belle waited to read the letter until Will Stevens left, then sent me in search of Mama. This time the news was grim. Miss Martha's father had died. The captain was now ill, and although he was still able to dictate the letter, he was unable to travel. Miss Martha, Campbell, and Dory were all well. Mama gave a sigh of relief, but they were not likely to return in August as scheduled. At the end of July, Will Stevens came to the kitchen house, holding open a letter that had been addressed to him. Mama, seeing his solemn approach, ran up from the kitchen coop. "I have bad news," he said, looking first to Belle, then to Mama. "I'm sorry to tell you. Dory has died from yellow fever." Mama sank to a chair, and Belle rushed to her side. "I'll get George," Will Stevens said. After he left, the silence was so deep that I held my breath, fearing the least sound would catapult us into pain. My arms felt weak, and I slowly set Suki on the floor. Used to attention, she pulled my skirt to her eyes and played peekaboo, breaking the silence with her laughter. Mama gave a low moan and pulled her apron up to her face, trying to hide her anguish. Suki, thinking this part of a game, crawled over and pulled herself up to stand beside her grandmother's knee.
"Boo! Boo!" she said,
with an expectant smile. When Mama lifted up her grandchild, Suki laughed and threw her arms around her grandmother's neck. When Mama May began to cry, we all began to cry.
Chapter 20. Belle. For a couple of days after we hear Dory's gone, Mama don't act like herself. She walks up to the big house, then she comes down again to the kitchen, forgetting why she's going up there. She says, "Maybe Dory coming home. Maybe they got it wrong. Maybe when that carriage come back, Dory come running down to get her Suki." Papa says Mama just needs some time. It's hard on her, he says, not to see for herself. Not to have Dory here to put down next to baby Henry. I know Dory's gone. I feel it when I hold Suki. Dory's like my own sister, but I don't show my feelings. I try to stay strong for Mama. Suki's hanging on to Lavinia, who's good with her, but I know that Lavinia's waiting on Campbell. I don't know why she cares for that baby like she do. I wonder what happens when we go to Philadelphia and she got to leave him behind. Papa don't look me in the eye when he sees me. I know he got Ben to jump the broom with Lucy. When I think of Benny's lips on her, I want to stomp that girl's head. She's just some ugly thing up from the quarters. One night I go down to Ben's place just to know for sure. I hear them together, and they're sounding like animals. But I stay to listen 'cause I can't move. My feet won't take me. My heart's banging so hard I sit right down in the high grass, never mind the snakes. I stay till Ben is snoring, then I go back to my house. I can't see for crying. Next day, Ben's working here in my kitchen when Will Stevens comes with a letter. I talk to Will like he's one fine man. Ben's eyes are spitting fire when he runs out of here. Makes me feel good. Everybody's thinking that when I go to Philadelphia and get with the captain's shoe man, then I'm going to be happy. But I don't want no ugly shoe man. I want my Benny. If they just put Lucy back in the quarters and give Bennett to me, I won't say a thing about it. I don't sleep at night thinking how to do Lucy.
Chapter 21. Lavinia. The last of the leaves were falling the mid-November afternoon of 1793 when the black carriage rolled up the drive. The captain and his party had finally come home. Fanny and Beatty were in the big house with Mama and Uncle Jacob, preparing for the traveler's arrival. While Suki napped, I worked alongside Belle in the kitchen, where we were about to put the finishing touches on plum cakes. To make them, we had added currants and raisins to a pound cake recipe, then poured the batter into small tins. The little cakes were still warm from baking, and before Belle gave me one as a treat, she drizzled a white sugar coating over the crusty top. When I heard the carriage roll up, I gulped down the cake in a few large bites as I ran for the big house. I was beside myself with excitement. Campbell was home. Uncle Jacob and Mama were already at the carriage. Fanny and Beatty stood to their side, prepared to help. Miss Martha was the first to emerge. It was hard to believe the toll that the past difficult months had taken on her. Before, I had seen her ill, but this was different. Now her face was drawn and deeply lined, and she squinted into the light as she stepped heavily down from the carriage. Nothing, though, prepared me for the appearance of the emaciated, aged-looking man Uncle Jacob helped from the carriage. The captain had survived yellow fever, but looked to have lost his very person. After the captain and the mistress were taken into the house, I waited alone with eager anticipation for Campbell and his nurse to appear. Finally, I could wait no longer and approached the carriage. "Campbell," I called softly, certain he would recognize my voice. The interior of the carriage was surprisingly small and smelled horribly of sickness. After my eyes adjusted to the dark, I saw it was empty. I raced in through the front door and caught the small party as they headed upstairs. "Where's Campbell?" I called after them. Mama turned back and shook her head to silence me. "He with Dory," she said. I stood for a long moment, trying to take in the meaning of Mama's words. Then I ran out again to look once more in the carriage. Stunned, I made my way down to the kitchen house. Belle had Suki in her arms when she found me out beside the woodpile, where I was vomiting up the plum cake. Belle's eyes filled with compassion when I recovered enough to tell her about Campbell. Suki put her arms out for me, and to my own shock, I hit at her. She was startled, for she had never been struck. Confused, she began to scream for me, wanting me to hold her. I couldn't bear her tears and reached for her through my despair. "I'm sorry, I'm sorry," I cried, taking her in my arms. "I'm sorry, I'm sorry." Belle held my chin and turned my face to hers. "Don't you go blaming yourself," she said. "You had nothing to do with that baby dying." With Suki's arms clinging tight round my neck, I wept. Through the next weeks, it was her need for me that brought me back. Fanny, as it turned out, became the captain's favorite nurse. He was drawn to her quick ways, and when she expressed her observations coupled with her wit, she frequently coaxed from him a smile, and even, on occasion, a chuckle. The doctor came often to bleed his patient, But after he left, the captain appeared more lethargic than before. Mama observed this for a few weeks until she finally convinced the captain to refuse the doctor his bloodletting treatments. After the captain agreed, she worked hard to stimulate his appetite. In the morning before the sun rose, Mama went out with one of the twins, and while they held the lantern, she killed the chicken. Then she brought it to the kitchen, cleaned the bird, and simmered it with a large handful of fresh green parsley from the garden, cloves of garlic, onion, and a generous amount of salt. Throughout the day, Fanny spoon-fed him the broth. Chamomile tea was another of the liquids that Mama had the captain drink, and in the evenings she gave him a glass of sweetened and watered-down wine to help him rest. After a few days he was asking for bits of chicken, but Mama refused him. Instead, she mashed and stirred cooked carrots into the broth and promised that soon he could have the chicken. When that day came, Fanny carried back his empty bowl, as proud as if she had eaten it herself. And Mama breathed a deep sigh of relief.
"He coming back," she said.
Uncle Jacob did not leave the captain's side but slept on a floor pallet at night. It was through his intervention that Belle was able to visit with her father when the mistress was asleep in her own bedroom. On her first visit, the captain told Belle that her young man from Philadelphia would not be coming for her after all. He told her how, on their arrival, yellow fever was just beginning to take hold, and when the disease was later determined to be contagious, thousands of terrified citizens fled. Over that summer, even the president, George Washington, left the city, and the government was shut down. The captain spoke of Miss Martha's struggle, how she nursed first her father, then Dory, and finally himself. He failed to mention Campbell, and when Belle asked about him, the captain hesitated, but then seemed relieved to confide in someone.
"After Dory died," he said, "Martha was overcome with fear, certain I would die too. I was too ill to help, but I knew that Martha wasn't herself. The baby cried for days. One morning, when I no longer heard his cry, I insisted that she bring him to me. But he was already gone."
He took a deep breath.
"Thank God help arrived. Your young man was one in a community of free black people who helped us. At first it was thought that Negroes couldn't contract yellow fever, but after Dory died we knew otherwise. There was little food and farmers wouldn't come into the city markets, but when your young man came, he brought us food and took away. He proved again and again to be the man I thought he was. He would have been a good husband, Bill. I would have been proud to have you marry him. But he too died of the disease."
The captain's voice shook.
"We visited hell, and now I fear for Martha."
As did everyone. Her behavior had no meaning. She wandered from room to room, moving furniture and household articles from place to place. Mama took me to her, thinking I might bring her what I once had, but the vacant look in her eyes frightened me, and she did not react to me as Mama had hoped. Once again the doctor made his appearance and prescribed doses of laudanum. If the truth be told, we were all relieved to see her take the medication that helped her to sleep. In the following days, Belle, believing that she might now remain here, was almost giddy with relief. Taking her lead, I too began to hope again that my future here was secure. I did, however, intend to go to Philadelphia when I was older. My child's heart would not accept the loss of Campbell. I convinced myself that a mistake had been made. Certain that he was alive and being cared for by loving people, I resolved one day to find him. I had never forgotten my brother, and now decided that when I was old enough, I would be reunited with both Cardigan and Campbell. Suki's need no doubt saved me. She continued to share my pallet. Hers was the first face I saw in the morning, and the last I saw before I slept. She relied on me more than ever, and her first spoken word was Binny, her version of my name. I slept at night with Suki clutched next to me, determined never to lose her. Mama sent Beatty for me the cold December morning of hog-killing day. The squeal of the dying pigs had affected Miss Martha in a way that had her asking for Isabel. Beatty and Suki came with me and stayed behind in the blue room while I went in to see the mistress. When I entered the bedroom, Miss Martha appeared more lucid than before, but on seeing me, insisted that I bring the baby to her. I was at a loss until I heard Suki's giggle from the blue room. I had a sudden thought and looked to Mama. She read my intention and nodded, so I left and returned with Suki. Miss Martha reached for the baby as though she were the very babe she'd asked for. Suki, an outgoing child, was unafraid and readily went into the arms of the lost woman. The child sat back on the bed to study the surroundings, and when Miss Martha tickled her tummy, she giggled and clasped her fat little hands over Miss Martha's. When Suki caught sight of the Williamsburg Muppet poised on the dresser next to the bed, Miss Martha had me get it for her. Suki took the doll and inspected it carefully, gingerly fingering its finery. That day, Miss Martha watched the baby play with the doll until they both fell asleep. Following that visit, Miss Martha asked for the baby almost daily. When Suki came, anticipating play with a beloved Muppet, Miss Martha held open her arms and was always satisfied when Suki willingly obliged her. There was increasing discord down in the quarters. With the captain home, Will Stevens had returned to his father's farm. Rankin, puffed up with power, was back in control. According to Ida, Rankin used her son to vent his frustrations, and Jimmy, fueled by his loss of Dory, threatened to fight back. Ida feared for his life, and in desperation she asked Papa George to appeal to the captain. Beatty and I were polishing the furniture on the upstairs landing when Papa George entered the captain's bedroom. He left the door ajar, so when Rankin followed soon after, we saw him listen, unnoticed, outside the bedroom door. When Papa made his case for Jimmy, the captain refused him. Rankin, Papa was reminded, had been on the plantation for the past 5 years, and although the captain knew that he was a tough taskmaster, the plantation was doing well. The captain said that until he was in better health, he must support Rankin in his decisions. When Papa emerged, he looked startled to find Rankin in the hallway. Rankin, unseen by the captain, stretched his foot across the doorway, forcing Papa to step over it. I wondered why Papa didn't pick up the smaller man and heave him to the side. Instead, Papa nodded to him. I noted, though, Papa's stiff gait and how he clenched his fists as he walked away. At Christmas, the captain, still not strong enough to go down to the quarters for the celebration, sent Papa and Ben with a barrel of apples, 3 large hams, and 4 jugs of brandy. We learned later through Ida that Rankin had sold 2 of the hams and kept 2 of the jugs of brandy for himself. There was growing discontent among the workers, as Rankin was again taking half the daily food rations and trading the corn and fat back for liquor for himself. The people were hungry, she said. Ben confirmed the grim conditions in the quarters. Although he was able to provide food for Lucy, he wasn't able to keep her from the hard labor in the fields. New sections of land were being cleared for tobacco growing, and the women, as well as the men, took part in the demanding physical labor. Rankin was becoming increasingly bold and dangerous, and no one dared speak up. Ben had distanced himself from his family and most especially from Belle. At night he took his food from Mama's house and ate alone, or he waited in his shed for Lucy to come back up from the quarters. Mama tried, without much success, to befriend Ben's wife. I knew even then how foreign and privileged our lives must have been in contrast to her own. On Christmas Day, Lucy came to Mama's house with Ben, but she stood shyly at the door, refusing a seat. Ben grew frustrated and spoke angrily to her, and with that, she ran back to their shed. Ben silently ate his meal before he went back with Christmas dinner Mama sent for his wife. Mama May said Lucy had always been shy. Mama knew Lucy's background and told us how, at Suki's tender age, Lucy had been taken from her mother and brought to this plantation. She was given to the old woman who cared for the many children of the quarters. The old woman was not unkind, Mama said, but she had too many children to properly care for them.
Lucy get took from her mama too soon, Mama May said. You don't take animals away that young.
Give her time, Papa said. She come round. For the rest of that winter, the captain's health remained unstable. As soon as he made progress, he pushed himself to exhaustion that sent him back to bed. Then, in spite of Mama's protests, the doctor came again to bleed and purge his patient. During those bouts, the captain was irritable and demanding, but Belle, with her nightly visits, and Fanny, with her cheerful wit, were the two who settled him. For the most part, Miss Martha remained in her bedroom. Once, though, Uncle Jacob found her wandering at night, trying to unlock the gun case. She told Uncle Jacob that she was going to shoot the whore, but Uncle convinced her to return to her bed. From then on, Beatty slept in the blue room. The spring of 1794 was cold and wet. Some of the workers from the quarters were ill with cough and fever, but Rankin insisted they were well enough to set out tobacco plants. Papa George said they were sick because they were close to starving. When our family sat down to the evening meal, it was difficult to enjoy the simple but plentiful food, knowing of the hunger such a short distance away. There was a cold, steady drizzle the morning Ida ran up from the quarters to pound on the kitchen door. She stayed outside, shaking, unable to speak until Belle pulled her in from the rain and threw a blanket around her trembling shoulders. When Ida finally spoke, it was difficult to understand her through her chattering teeth. During a storm the night before, her oldest boy, Jimmy, and his younger brother, Eddie, had broken into the smokehouse for food.
"Just a scrap," she said. "For the little ones."
They waited for a flash of lightning to see the nails, then pried off the boards while thunder buffered the noise. After taking only one small piece of fat back, they reversed their entry and worked again with nature to replace the smokehouse boards. They thought that Rankin was sleeping, but he smelled the boiling meat. When he burst into their cabin, he pulled Jimmy out and tied him to a stake in the yard. Rankin beat him until Jimmy finally admitted that he had taken the meat. Rankin was jubilant, certain that Ben was also involved in the theft, but Jimmy insisted that he had acted alone. Rankin, in an effort to have Jimmy name Ben, continued to hit him. Ida said,
"I go to stop him, but he say he start with the little ones if I don't stay back. Even though they his babies, he say they just little niggers, and they nothing to him."
In her terrible impotence, Ida pounded at her own legs.
"He beaten my Jimmy now."
Belle moved fast.
"I'm going up to the big house, Ida. You stay here," she instructed.
But Ida left again for the quarters as soon as Belle left. I don't know what Belle said, but I do know that the captain dressed and had Ben and Papa George accompany him down to the quarters. Jimmy, still tied to the stake, was dead. Ida sat next to him, holding his head out of the mud and talking to her son as though he were still alive. Men and women from the quarter circled the mother, afraid to untie the young man's body. Rankin, drunk, was in his cabin. The captain, enraged, had him removed and thrown onto his horse. He was told that he would be jailed should he return. Then the captain sent Ben to fetch Will Stevens. The captain offered Will Stevens a proposal. To the best of Fanny's understanding, she was the only one of us present at the meeting, Will Stevens was to act as the sole overseer for a period of 5 years. Each year he would earn 50 acres, and at the end of the agreed-upon time he would be given his choice of 4 Negroes, 2 female, 2 male, to begin his own tobacco farm. Will Stevens accepted the offer, and because of it, we lived peacefully for the next 2 years.
Chapter 22, 1796, Belle. Every time we think the captain's getting better, he gets sick all over again. He goes up and down like this for almost 2 years. When the captain first tells me that the shoe man's gone from yellow fever, I want to jump up and dance. but I say real nice. Do I still have to go to Philadelphia?
Yes, when I'm well, the captain says.